Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Big week.
Big week.
Yeah, for a little computer. Bigger than a little computer, but littler than a big computer.
Yeah, I don't know. They could have called it the Mac Maxi, maybe, or the Mac MIDI, maybe. I don't know. That would have been confusing, I guess.
Mac, I don't know.
What do you think
Studio.
About Studio? It's an interesting name.
Mm. I remember it as a catchy jingle for hair gel in the 80s. I'm not going to repeat the jingle, but people who remember it, will, they know what I'm talking about. Yeah, really interesting, right? Like a new Mac. Like, when was the last time
there was you guys talking about this and upgrading. We talked about the rebound, too.
A new Mac.
I could not...
An iMac Pro doesn't count. It's an iMac.
No,
looks
it's
just
an
like
iMac.
The iMac.
Yeah.
When was the last, like, a new Mac? And was it the I guess it was, I mean, the MacBook was technically already a thing, and then they brought it back. MacBook Pro has been around a long time. Like, I mean,
Mini, maybe?
And if you talk about, like, a new Mac, not just about name, but, like, new slot, new ecological niche and all that, I don't know, Mini might be how long ago since we had. Remember, because there was the great kind of pruning when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, where I was thinking about this because I'm writing a piece. Neil A. Patel at The Verge basically wrote to me and said, would you like to write a piece about the mythical mid-range Mac Mini Tower and the X-Mac? And like, okay, I can do that. And I was thinking back, and a moment of clarity I had when I was talking to the editor who's working on the piece with me, I had not written this into the piece, and I added it, which is, it used to be you could buy a desktop Power Mac. And that was like, that's what I bought. And that was the power user Power Mac. You didn't buy the big expensive tower Power Mac. You bought the Power Mac 7100, or there was even a beige Power Mac G3 desktop, not just the tower. There was a desktop model.
Yeah, I used one of those in high school.
And when Steve came back, those all went like away. And then there was like iMac or a tower.
Yeah.
And then eventually Mac Mini, which was not any more powerful than an iMac. So Mac Studio is really interesting because that's basically what it is, right? It's like a desktop Power Mac back in the day, where it's something that is more, it's not an all-in-one, and it's more than the Mac Mini, but it's not a giant tower. Like that sort of, it is sort of the revival of that kind of concept. And
it's
been a long time.
A lot like when I used to work in IT at a law school library, and we deployed all these like PCs as like workstations, both for the staff, and then we had like, you know, catalog lookup things for the patrons to use. And you'd have those little flat computers, you know, for a long time, and a monitor would sit on top of them.
There were the pizza boxes too. The pizza boxes that were super flat, and then there. In fact, it used to be that there was basically a good, better, best inside the Power Mac line, where you had a pizza box, and then you had that little, you know, taller kind of thing, and then you had the tower. And I don't know what the Mac Studio is, since there's no real, you know, internal anything. I guess it's kind of like a pizza box model. I mean, it's a lot smaller. But it's that kind of idea.
Donut box.
Yeah.
Small donut box.
Now, for a lot of us, so again, I've written two pieces now about this observation that I'm about to share with everybody. So sorry. But one of the things that I thought about and I wrote about at Macworld is how we've spent the last 15 years sort of shoving everybody to an iMac.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that I think it's been bad in many ways for the iMac product line, because you end up with these systems that have these fans that just blow incessantly because they're really not, other than the iMac Pro, they were really not engineered to be, and nor is the iMac really, it was never meant to be the system for everyone. It was meant to be this easy all-in-one consumer computer, and then over time it just got everybody else who wanted a desktop got shoved into it. And now we've got the friendly little 24-inch iMac. It's like, oh, it's back to being what it was. But that said, I've had an iMac as my primary computer since the 5K iMac came out. And I'm used to it. And there are advantages to having an all-in-one, right? Like, I hang that on a Visa mount, and my whole computer is hovering there. And this Mac Studio, like, okay, you can get a display, whether it's the new Apple Studio display or some other display, and you can put that in an arm if you want, whatever. But you still got a box on your desk, right?
Either it needs to be on your desk, or you need to squirrel it away somewhere. And
can't wait for 12 South to make their perfectly shaped under desk mount for the Mac Studio. I hope that they are already on it.
I wouldn't bet against it. I think it is interesting. I mean, I grew up in an era where my first two computers were a Mac LC and a Performa 6300, both of which fall perfectly within that sort of, you had like a flat computer and then a monitor sitting on top of it, right? Like that was the de facto impression of if you asked somebody what a computer looked like up until about, you know, the mid 90s, late 90s, maybe, like that was what a computer looked like. And you were kind of going back to that, which is very interesting. And I think it's, I mean, everything that I've read about the studio, obviously, and seen in the presentation, it suggests that Apple, I've noticed this a little bit more in the past few years. I think Apple is moving into a world where they see not just the high-end Macs as for sort of pro, quote-unquote, pro users, but I think the Mac in general has tilted heavily towards the Mac, the pro side of that, like, equation. And I say that because, like, there was an era briefly there where we had, like, the 5K iMacs were very powerful machines. And then above it, you had the iMac Pro. And then above it, you had the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And the Apple admitted, like, look, the Mac Pro audience is a very small chunk, right, of our consumer base, right? It was like, at one point, I think they said something like 1%. I don't remember how true that was. But it was a small number. And they, you know, as a result, the same way you say it's sort of like tipped to including the iMac into like the pro lineup, I think they were just thinking more and more that people using computers are pro users as opposed to people using, say, iPads. And I think there's still some truth to that. I think they do nudge a lot of the Mac stuff towards the more powerful end of the spectrum because more and more people use phones and iPads to get by with a lot of the stuff they're doing every day. So there are exceptions, the MacBook Air, obviously, but like even the laptop line, you got the Air at the bottom. Every other laptop is a MacBook Pro, right? Three out of the four laptop computers they sell are MacBook Pros. So, yeah.
Yeah, I get the idea, the argument that the Mac is maybe fundamentally for people who want a computer, like because they really leaned into the whole iPad thing. And it's true, like, my mom is that way, where my mom used to have a MacBook Pro, I think, back in the day, and now she's just got an iPad. Like, because all she was doing, it really wasn't necessary. But it's not entirely true, because you have the people who don't want an iPad, right? Like, I mean, it's just purely ergonomics. And that's why I think Apple has changed their story a little bit, and now they're sort of like, and there's going to be a new MacBook Air at some point that will hit this home. But like you already see it with the 24-inch iMac, where it's like, you know, this computer, it's fun. It's for people who want a computer to do stuff. And it's got enough power that you could do like real stuff with it. But like, it's not a pro computer. It's not meant to be a pro computer. It's a fun little colorful computer that sits on your desk and you'll do web and email and you can do your photos and whatever. But that's what it's for. And we have other products, is what they're saying, that are for the people who are more serious about it. But what they're not doing is releasing a product that is like, you know, for the pros, that's also for the regular people. Now, this may be a special moment in time, right? Because there's a lot of speculation out there. A lot of people who are like, I don't really believe it. And I think I'm one of them, because it does feel like the Mac Mini is going to get an option at some point for a more powerful chip, maybe M2 and M2 Pro or something like that. And then the iMac may too also have a, you know, built-to-order option that might not be like a Max or an Ultra, but might be a Pro. If you want a little bit more, spend a little bit more, get a little bit faster computer. It's good for Apple's profit margins. It's good for somebody on a budget who wants an iMac but needs a little bit more than the M1 can give them. And a larger iMac, I don't believe the larger iMac is dead. I think it's dead now, but I think it's going to come back. I'm not sure it's going to come back and be the product designed to also appeal to people like me.
Sure.
Right? I think maybe they're going to take their foot off the gas a little bit there. But some people like an all-in-one, right? I mean, just like some people have been complaining all along that they wanted that mythical mid-range mini tower, like, you know, modular, let me attach my own monitor kind of thing. And they got something like that with the studio. But there are other people who are like, well, the iMac is fine. I really like having an iMac. So I don't know.
Yeah. So it's weird because I'm in that exact position. 10 years ago, you know, I started using an iMac just over 10 years ago. And until then, I had been largely a laptop only person for several years, basically since my Power Mac G3 tower was like still ran, but it was like, you know, got a little long in the tooth. But before that, I had always been a two, you know, a desktop and a laptop person. And I had bought the Power Mac. Like you said, if you wanted more power, you bought the Power Mac, right? So like that's why I had a Power Mac G3 for so many years. And now there was a time where I would have been like, oh yeah, that mid-range tower, that's what I'm looking for. That's the sweet spot for me. And I looked at the Mac Studio this week and thought, I think it's too much for what I do. And then I, as I wrote in the article I put up on Six Colors, like, I don't really know what the right Mac is for me right now, because I do feel like I'm in the middle. Yep. I need something that's got more power than an M1, because I need more than two Thunderbolt ports. I need more than 16 gigs of RAM. If there was a 24-inch with a Mac M1 Max option in it, like, that would be something I would consider. Or if there were, honestly, I think what I'm leaning to at this point is waiting to see what happens with the Mini, and if there's a Pro version of that, then maybe that's where I would probably put my money. But even so, it still brings me back to having a computer on my desk, which is weird. So I don't know how long I want to wait is the other problem. Like, now all the rumors are talking about things not showing up until 2023, and it's like, really? Yeah. I'm going to be stuck with this for another year? So I feel very conflicted about this, because as great a product as it is, it's just slightly above the budget that I wanted to put out for it. Because in order to get the computer I want, I'm paying at least $3,600, which is about $1,000 more probably than I spent on this iMac, or my Power Mac G3 back in the day was about $2,500.
Yeah, I think the argument is that over time, if you buy an external display, it means that you can swap out your computer and keep your display, and that you will, you know, you're going to use that display, and maybe you save money over time, ? But the truth is, yeah, it is on its own, I think getting an M1 Max for $2,000 is not a bad deal.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But what you're saying is basically like, but it's too much. It's like, you don't need it to be that much, especially if you have to pair it with buying an external display, because you don't have one, because you've been using an iMac for so long that you don't have an external display.
And moreover, you make a great point, like, as we've talked about a bunch, that the, you know, your external display allows you to keep using it. The problem is, you also have to, I don't think I'm like super untrustworthy of Apple at this point, but you got to trust that they're going to keep making, like, that this isn't a fluke, right? I feel better about Apple today doing this than Apple of maybe 5 years ago. But at the same time, you're like, well, what if I buy this display and then like 4 years from now when it comes to replace it,
I'm sure that the display, although they will undoubtedly release a better display. In fact, there are already rumors that they're working on a, you know, one that's micro LED or mini LED and is going to be like presumably a lot more expensive too, but it's going to be awesome. But I think there will always be a Mac you can plug into this monitor.
Right.
Even if the Mac Studio doesn't work out, the Mac Mini, I think, will be there. Right. And that would have been another way they could have gone. I mean, this really is a Mac Mini. This really is
it's a scaled up Mac.
We want to do a Mac Mini that's got more power in it. And they're like, well, the existing case, it's not really enough. Why don't we do a bigger one? And they chose to call it something new, Mac Studio. It's literally like 2.5 Mac Mini stacked on top. If you look
at most of that top is like cooling. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So it is kind of like a pro Mac Mini. Which is an interesting idea, but like, again, and it serves a purpose. It's like really great for people who are like, I bought an iMac Pro, so it's very much my story here, which is I want a little bit more than what the regular stuff can give me, but I'm not going to buy a Mac Pro. It's never going to happen. Just forget it. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So you end up in this place. But yeah, it is interesting, like, because they could have done an M1 Pro version of this that was even cheaper than $1,999, and they chose not to.
I think that's
where the Mac Mini falls, right? That the
agree.
Mac Mini in the end, because we now know we have the M whatever Pro, which is like a binned version of the M1 ever Max, and then there's the M1 ever Ultra, which is the, you know,
two Maxes glued together,
two stuck together. So that's currently Apple's kind of chip universe. It's, I think, obvious that at some point they're going to offer those configure to order configurations of the low end of some low end models, probably the Mac Mini and maybe even the 24-inch iMac, that have a Pro chip variant, And it's literally like, you want a little more power? Give us more money. And they like that because some people are going to give them more money for it, and it will be a little bit faster.
It's the exact strategy they use with their other product lines, right? In terms of not just the Mac, but on the iPhone and the iPad, they're very careful about positioning stuff at all the different price points, right? Like, oh, you can buy this, you can buy an iPhone SE for $429, but you want a little bit more, you can go up to, an iPhone 13. You want a little bit more than that, you can go up to a 13 Pro, right? Like, it's like a couple $100 increments, right? They want to get you wherever you are. But right now, the jump between a high-end Mac Mini or iMac and the Mac Studio is a lot more than a couple $100 because of the need to buy a display if you don't have it. And yes, you could buy a cheaper display, but honestly, if you're used to coming from an iMac,
you
want something comparable, right? You want something comparable, not feeling like you're taking this weird sort of step back to be able to afford the same computer. So having the option to go up and spend a few $100 more to get a better chip seems like a no-brainer, because there really isn't anything between about $2,000 and that $3,600 for the studio display and studio. There's just not anything in there.
My gut feeling is that your answer is probably going to be, if you don't cave and get a Mac Studio, your answer is probably going to be a new Mac Mini that ranges up a little bit higher with the external display. Or a 27 or a 24-inch iMac that's got M2
if it has an option
with an option to
and
to
I
make
think
it a little
that
bit more.
Entirely now depends on what the M2 architecture looks like,
right?
And whether it can, because we know the limitations of the M1 at this point, and we're assuming that the M2 will be more capable when it comes to things like not only potentially having some more cores in the processor, but also just I/O, right? Like I/O is a serious limitation.
Ports and memory are the
ports and memory are big bottlenecks
limitations
on the
M1. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fine for, I have an M1 Air. It's a great machine. Like what I use it for, it is fantastic. I have no complaints about that. But when it comes to my desktop, I am using every single USB port on the back of my iMac. And that's six, I want to say. Like
I want to say the one of the great things about the Mac Studio is the port story, right? Like Apple did it right. I wrote that story about what I wanted the iMac to be, and there is no iMac, so whoops. But so I didn't get any of the things I wanted is what I'm saying. But one of the things I said was USB-A ports. Like, put them on there. Don't just deal a card slot. Just do it. Just do it. And they did it. They did not shirk their responsibility. Like, even the Mac Mini has USB-A slots, right? Or ports. So there's Thunderbolt and there's USB-A to USB-A, which is great because I have USB-A stuff plugged into my Mac all the time.
Sure.
Like that's a must. And then they've got two on the front, when was the last time Apple put ports on the front and the card slot? Like,
I mean, the closest is the Mac Pro has them on the top.
Right.
And then the old, way back to the cheese grater, there was one on the front.
Cheese grater was the last time. So that's really nice to see that they again have listened. Somebody wrote a piece, it might have been on The Verge, actually, that was basically, hey, Apple's listening to its customers and giving them what they want instead of what Apple thinks they should take. Mm-hmm. And I think for pro products, that's the right way to go. I think the asceticism of Apple's design philosophy, something like the M1 iMac, a consumer product like that, that's a good place for that. A good place to say, we're not going to overdo it. We're not going to overdo it. We're gonna keep it simple and have it be fun and nice and compact and just super simple. And a MacBook Air, I think, is the same way, right? And that's the difference between a pro laptop or a pro desktop and something that's made for general consumer audiences. General consumer audience, they're not going to use it, and you really want to keep it simple. And the pros don't want you to keep it simple, and that was a problem for a bunch of years where Apple's like, no, we're simplifying your life, pros. And they're like, no, you're making it more complicated. You're making us buy adapters and take extra cables and things. You're simplifying your hardware, but complicating our lives. And there was this huge disconnect. And it's impossible to look at the Mac Studio and not think, oh, they got over it.
Right. I mean, not only that, but it you can boil it down as simply as looking at the fact that, Jason, they made kind of an ugly computer.
Yeah.
That is not a big, that's not a small deal for Apple, a company that has prized aesthetics and design. And it's not to say it's not well designed, but it's not particularly attractive. And they have been a company that have been accused of prioritizing, you know, form over function for a long time. And it feels very much. Like this is a computer where they, and I would argue the redesigned Mac Pro as well, which does a nice balance of being a computer that is very well designed, but, you know, is functional and is not like the trash can, right? Which is what, as everybody points out, kind of the pinnacle of form over function. But yeah, I don't think the Mac Studio is a great looking computer, but it certainly seems capable. And for pros, that's the important part.
Yeah. I was looking, I was scrolling on Tuesday night through all the web pages of this and thinking to myself, it's not attractive.
No.
I mean, some of it is you get used to it and all that, and you know, the heart grows fonder and all that, but it's just a big...
it's a big chunk of aluminum.
It's just aluminum block with an Apple logo on it. You know what? That's the whole idea here is, you know, what did you want, people? You wanted this, like, that, yes, it's a little homely, and it does the job, and it's what you want, and I think there's something to be said for that they didn't constrain it. I mean, it could have looked nicer, but if it would have made it less functional, they shouldn't have done it, and so they didn't. And mm-hmm. like that's really good. By the way, I just want to point out, we're living in a world, or we're about to live in a world, where Apple sells a 20-core CPU, 48-core GPU, 32-core neural engine computer. That's bananas, right? That's like literally take the high-end MacBook Pro, which is basically what the M1 Max configuration is of the Mac Studio, and double it. Just literally, just it's twice as fast as that. It's that's wild.
And this is the fascinating part, and I think I wrote about this even a year ago or so. I'd have been with the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro, but talking a little bit about what I mentioned before, where it tilts towards the high end. There's still a computer above this to show up. That's the question. It's like, wait a second. This thing is bananas. It is, the performance on this seems just, off the charts. And the question is, there's overhead. There's room over this for them to go and say, we have an even more capable computer. And maybe it's just where this, the Mac Pro is now, like, hey, we've got an M1 Ultra in it, and it also has, you know, internal expansion capability, because we know that's what pros are looking for. And I think maybe, I know there's some speculation that the Studio is the half-height Mac Pro, and I thought, like, for a while, I agreed with that, and then I started thinking about it more. I was like, I wonder if the Mac Pro itself
is
just
the half-height Mac Pro,
it's just smaller because they don't need as much cooling because of the the M series chips are not as hot as the Intel chips, but you still have enough room for maybe a couple card slots, because people will cry bloody murder if there isn't a Mac Pro with card slots.
Yeah, although what goes in the card slots remains to be seen.
That's a great question.
Maybe it's just internal storage. There's room for more internal storage in there or something, but it's unclear to me. But yes, it's a lot. And so even though it gives me pause, like I laughed when they basically said, okay, so we've got one of these and it's $2,000. And then we've got this other thing where it's double, and it's double. It's $4,000. It's like literally, it's just double. And $4,000 computer without a monitor or a keyboard, that's a lot. And yet you look at it and you're like, it's a lot. Like it's staggering. And I bought the $2,000 Mac Studio. That's what I bought. Because I took the plunge. I bought that iMac Pro too. So right, like I was like, okay, no, I'm gonna do this. But not without pause, right? And not without thinking to myself, well, maybe, you know, we'll see. But like I'm open to leaving my iMac lifestyle behind, I guess. So I'm gonna take the plunge. But I never considered the $4,000 model, because not only is it probably over, I mean, it would be nice. I'm sure it would be nice, but that's a lot of money for just a little block of aluminum with a copper heatsink inside it, apparently.
Sure. Yeah.
So but for me, with all of my audio processing and stuff like that, I really wanted to have the Apple Silicon kind of stuff. And we'll see. When I get mine, I'm going to do some benchmark testing versus the stuff that I do, right? Like Isotope plugins, and so which just went Apple Silicon native. Like mm-hmm, that's the kind of stuff, because in the end, that's going to, whether that purchase was a good one or not is going to come down to that stuff being a lot better. Although right. I think like the storage is faster, and like, because the some stuff Apple does is incremental, and it's minor, and so we don't talk about it. But then you look at some of these high end Apple Silicon systems, and they're you know, they keep making the SSD transfers faster,
and right?
Like
yeah.
that matters. That is like not an exciting stat, but it matters if you've got a big media file and you're writing it back to disk. It matters. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to getting mine, which I ordered on day one. I did the thing where you order it and you're like, I can cancel later, but I got to order it now. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And we'll see. We'll see how it fares and how much it puts my iMac Pro to shame. But honestly, once Isotope went native, it basically put my MacBook Air puts my iMac Pro to shame. So
yeah, I mean, it did occur to me briefly. It's like, well, could I just buy a studio display and just hook my Air up to it for the time
being?
Well,
you could. You
I
sure could.
And then I know. And then I thought about all the like annoyances of like I'd have to plug stuff into the monitor and get a hub and like. And move stuff over and migrate, but then I won't have my iMac to migrate the new computer. And I was just like, I don't know. That seems like, does it get me anything, or is it just a lateral move? So.
I mean, I think that's the answer. Is it's a lateral. If you're thinking you want to move, and your iMac is long in the tooth, then it would be. It is a lateral move, but it's a lateral move that allows you to bide your time.
Right. I mean, but is it something that's going to, I mean, yeah, how much time does it buy me? I think is the question. And what is the time scale? Because at this point, it's like, well, I'm content, not happy, but I am content to sit pat until at least WWDC rolls around and I can reassess based on any announcements that come out of that. If it looks like that happens and like, hey, these, you know, these mini and iMac updates are still off to 2023, then all right, that's going to be a harder decision at that point. But, you know, the iMac continues to work. Nothing about the Mac Studio's existence makes my iMac any worse than it was last week.
This is true.
So I have to tamp down my feelings of envy for all the really cool computers that are coming out and sort of sit tight. So I will do that for the moment. I will slightly assuage it by instead buying a new iPad, which I did do.
Oh, I was going to say there are other products announced. So what did you get the base iPad Air? Did you scale up or did you go for the iPad Pro?
I bought the Pro.
So the existence of the iPad Air still being so close to the Pro that you might as well buy the Pro led you to buy the Pro.
The short answer was I looked at my iPad Pro that I currently have and I was only using 60 gigabytes of storage, and I thought, well, that's kind of close for 64.
Yeah,
I don't want to have to husband it. I need 128 gigs. I'm not paying for 256 gig iPad Air, because as soon as I do that, I might as well buy the 128 gig Pro, mm-hmm. which is what I did. So the downside is, because of the supply chain, it
oh no, legacy nodes,
it's not even shipping for at least another 5 days, so I'm just sitting here with the case I bought on Amazon. I got that. I just open and close that a bunch. Pretend I have a new iPad.
Pretend you have a new iPad. That'll be great.
So, but the Air, there's nothing wrong with the Air, but that was a disappointment that the storage still started at 64 gigabytes, because it made it a non-starter for me. And I think everything else about the Air is very attractive. Like you know, I haven't had Face ID on an iPad, so even though I have it on my phone, I haven't really missed not having it on the iPad. But you know, other than that, like, it's really only the existence. What is it, like ProMotion on the display, basically, and Thunderbolt on the connector instead of USB-C. It's little stuff, right? Like, but enough little stuff that it felt like, well, that adds up, and it's nice to have. But I could have gotten by with the Air, but the storage really just means it's just not feasible for me.
It's funny how buying logic works, but I think that's the right decision.
Right.
I think we already thought that was the right decision if they didn't make any changes. And although they announced a new iPad Air, they didn't really make any changes to their pricing structure for it.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm I'm content for the moment to get the Pro. I think it'll be a very good machine for me, a nice update. And the one thing I've held off on is there's been a lot of pricing volatility around the Magic Keyboard. Like I've seen it on sale a bunch, so I'm kind of waiting on that. I will probably buy one eventually, but I feel that I don't need one immediately.
So what are you replacing?
I'm replacing a 2017 iPad Pro, the 10.5-inch model that still has the home
button. Oh, okay. Yeah, so
pre-redesign.
Yeah, keep an eye on that Magic keyboard.
Yeah, because they've been down. I mean, because the retail cost is very high. But they do seem to go on sale not infrequently. They've been down as low as like $150, which is bananas. So I'm not sure I'll get one at that price, but just based on when I end up needing it. But
right.
I don't use it very often as a keyboard. I have the smart keyboard on my current Pro.
Right.
I just don't use it very often. So... And now that I have universal control, I can kind of get by without it. So
sure, just surround yourself with little devices, and
that's right.
Yeah. Software updates are coming out next week, so we're gonna get universal control and
Face ID with masks.
With masks, and
just in time for all the mask mandates to go away.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they'll be back sometime at some point. I had an unexpected purchase this week. I had the expected purchase, which is Apple's going to announce something, I'm probably going to buy it, which is what happened. But I also had an unexpected purchase, which I don't know if I've mentioned it here before, the saga of my son's MacBook Air. But I told this somewhere, and I don't remember where. But basically, he had a thing where it said battery not charging, or battery charging, even when it was unplugged, it said the battery was charging. And one of his ports doesn't work, and the other one does, but you can't tell by plugging it in because it thinks it's always charging.
Yes, right.
And I was like, oh man, because he's going to college in the fall, and we're like, hold out, the Apple event is coming, maybe they'll announce something. They didn't. But I want to get him something before he goes off to school. And even if that new MacBook Air comes out, it's like, I don't want to get him a MacBook Air this time. I'm going to get him a MacBook Pro. It's going to be nice. And then on Tuesday, among everything else that's going on, he says, I think it was right before the Apple event when he was going to school. He says, yeah, when I open up my laptop, there's a bunch of horizontal lines going across the screen.
Oh no.
And he says, after a minute or two, it stops. Like, oh my God. And he is such a, I'm not going to make trouble. I'm not going to report. It'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. I don't want to, he lets these things go. This has happened with this laptop before, where he's like, yeah, some of the keys don't work and a port is not working. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, tell me and we'll get it fixed. So when the old video, something involving the display and or the video circuitry is now acting really bad. That was the moment where I'm like, well, I guess we're buying that laptop. So I bought a base model 14-inch MacBook Pro, now he's got his college computer. So there you go. That's that was not an expected purchase, but there it is. That also had very expensive week, is what I'm saying. Very expensive week.
Yes, very expensive week. Didn't buy any green iPhones, as I wanted one.
Yeah, my way of saying thank you to all of you for being members of Six Colors, because that was
I mean, I definitely started running the numbers when the Mac Studio showed up. I was like, oh, could I afford a Mac Studio? And it's like, I guess, but I'm also buying an iPad, and that one is definitely less functional right now, so I can afford to wait a little bit on the Mac decision, punt it down the road. But I'm curious. I mean, there has been a lot of talk about stuff shipping maybe in the May or June timeline as well. And now people are saying maybe 2023. It's very unclear. This next batch of Macs, which we are presuming, I think, will be M2 Macs. Unclear as to when they'll actually show up, because it feels strange to have maybe M2 Macs debut, you know, two, three months after you've just finished your M1 transition, but certainly possible. But could also be in the fall. Could be early next year. Really don't know.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. I imagine next week we'll have first reviews and stuff, because it'll be arriving in people's hands next week when we record.
Ooh, very exciting.
Australia will already have had it, because they do that because of the curvature of the earth and stuff.
damn that curvature.
Australia and New Zealand will be like, yeah, I got it already. All right. Next week, more, much more, because things are happening. It's so good. Things are happening. And oh, my bank account. Ouch. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.